Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, Justin. How are you?
I'm okay. I have a big announcement to make.
Should I be sitting down?
Yes.
I'm already sitting down, so we're good.
Okay, that works. Over the last few years, I've been having a lot of problems with my phone and all kinds of issues syncing with my car, all kinds of issues with apps stop working or text and autocorrect not working correctly. So today I got an iPhone.
You went to the dark side, Justin?
Yes, I did.
But that's all good, man. I'm glad you have a working phone.
Tonight's case is not exactly complicated. It's not exactly a mystery, but there are lots of questions to be asked and a lot of points of view that I've read about online and from the media and even from the court systems. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we're talking about the September 2020 murder of Jonathan Amaral. This happened in New Hampshire.
Jonathan was 25 years old at the time. And he was a resident of Keene, New Hampshire. He was born in Maine January 27th, 1995. He graduated Milton High School in 2013. He was the captain of both the indoor and outdoor track and cross-country team. He also received the White House Youth Volunteer of the Year several times for his volunteer work at a Boys and Girls Club. He was a sports lover and a Red Sox fan. He liked to hike. He was very active in a lot of social media. You know, he would organize hikes and all kinds of stuff in his area. He was just well-liked in a lot of his hiking communities and kind of a big name.
That was really his passion, I believe, was hiking.
He graduated from Rochester Institute of Technology in 2018 with a Bachelor's of Science in Biomedical Engineering. He was also a member of the Order of Engineers, an association for professionals and graduates in the field. He owned his own home, and he worked with a woman named Brittany Barron.
Brittany Barron was 31 years old and was born in New Mexico. She graduated from Southern New Hampshire University with an associate degree in business administration and management. She worked at Teleflex in Jaffrey as a machine operator. She had worked there for about 6 years and was dating Jonathan Amaral.
This all goes down Monday, September 21st, 2020. So very recent case. Justine Amaral reports her son, Jonathan, missing. She hasn't heard from him for several days, and he's not shown up to work. Now, his mother knew that he had gone hiking for the weekend, and she knew that other people were going with him, and she's kind of confirmed that. But she checked at his house, and she found his hiking equipment there. So she knew that he had returned home from hiking.
So the police go to Jonathan's home in Keene. They're trying to do a welfare check. Now his vehicle, a Subaru Impreza, is also missing. So after they visit, they go to where he works, Teleflex Medical. This is a medical supply store in Jaffrey, which we already mentioned earlier because both Jonathan and Brittany worked there. They found out that Jonathan never showed up for his shift and never called in absent. And here's the interesting thing. They also discovered that another employee also failed to show up for work that day, a woman named Brittany Barron. We already mentioned because she and Jonathan were dating. Here's where things differ, though. She did call the company and she said, "I quit. I'm not coming back."
That's a little weird.
So you might think, if Jonathan's missing and his vehicle's gone, you know, like he's just missing, she calls in and says, "I quit." Maybe they had a breakup. Maybe things got uncomfortable there and he's decided he needs a day off to go, I don't know, you know, maybe he goes hiking, but I don't know. It's just not like him not to call into work. But of course, everyone knows they're dating. It's not really a secret, except they haven't really come out and told everyone there. But it's just one of those open secrets. But here's the thing. Brittany Barron was married and had two kids. Brittany and Armando lived in a duplex, which on the other side of Armando's mother and husband, his stepfather, lived. His stepfather, Scott, actually owned the duplex. These homes shared a kitchen, attic, and basement. So the police then go to Brittany Barron's duplex. But she and her husband were not at home. So they talked to her mother-in-law, and she told the officers that the two were out hiking and that she was babysitting the kids.
They come back at 10:20 that night, and they found Armando sitting in his Jeep outside of his residence. But the vehicle was registered to someone else.
Yeah, to Scott Reckes. This is really strange, though, because Armando is just sitting by himself. And so they start asking him questions, such as, "Where's your wife, Armando? Where is she at?" And he said, "Well, I haven't seen her since late Saturday." He said he dropped her off at a street near Temple Mountain. He said she was planning on going camping with friends. And this had happened at about 2 a.m. And then, of course, that's actually Sunday, not Saturday. So then they're asking him questions about their marriage. And he said, "Well, I didn't want to go straight home because I needed some time to think." And he said he had texted back and forth with his wife until around 7 a.m. And he ended up driving about 200 miles from Temple to Errol, Coos County. That's about a 7-hour trip. So they continued to do interviews. And they also found out through a friend of Brittany's that she had brought up marital issues. They said that Brittany was thinking about relocating to New Mexico because she had family there. They said that she lamented that she would not be able to see her children, but she needed to distance herself from both her husband Armando and her boyfriend Jonathan Amaral. But that's all the information they could get. So at this point, they're thinking, well, Brittany's missing and Jonathan's missing. Maybe they're together.
There's a missing persons report on at least Jonathan, so they're able to start pulling records from cell towers and whatnot to try to track him down.
And this cell site analysis done by the New Hampshire State Police showed them that both Brittany Barron's cell phone and Jonathan Amaral's cell phone had been going through the same locations in the same direction around the same time. So this put their phones, meaning maybe the people, in Keene on Saturday, September 19th, between 11 p.m. and 11:15 p.m. And then by 11:30, Jonathan's phone was headed towards Jaffrey. So in this affidavit, Amaral's cell phone was using a cell tower that supplies services to both his place of employment and the home that Brittany Barron lived in with her husband and kids. So they think, looks like he went to go meet up with her.
And they're just assuming that they're together. Maybe she's left her husband and he doesn't quite understand that yet. And Jonathan's just not checking in with anyone because he's eloping with this woman.
His cell phone was in that vicinity and on until around 2:52 in the morning of Tuesday, September 22nd. Brittany's cell phone was in the Temple Mountain area at around 9:45 p.m. on September 19th, which was that Saturday, and was using a cell tower in Jaffrey from 10 p.m. to 3:30 a.m. On Sunday, September 20th, at 7:30 in the morning, Brittany's cell was pinpointed in Errol. There was no activity on that device in that area until 9:17 p.m. So all day long, the signal just went dead. So they keep tracking. They keep looking for any time that cell pinged off a tower. And on Monday, September 21st, the cell phone was recorded at 10:35 in the morning in the areas of Dixville, Notch, and Colebrook. It pinged in Errol, where it remained from 12:05 p.m. to 5:55 p.m. That was the last time that it was detected before all activity ceased.
Now, it's on September 22nd that two hunters had set up bear traps, like baiting traps, in this wooded area. And they see what appears to be people camping in that area. And that's kind of a no camping place because it's hunting land. So they call the conservation department, who sends out some fish and game officers, and they locate this tent and go approach whoever's there. They notice a large tarp covering what appears to be a vehicle. And there's also branches and foliage around it and on it, concealing it. And as they got close to the tent, a dog came out and started barking at them. And then a woman came out wearing sunglasses and carrying a firearm on a holster. She looked beat up. Her eyes were black. She had bruises all over her face and neck. They say this woman calmed the dog down, and they told her that she wasn't permitted to camp in this area. So she started to break down the tent and collect her personal items. And then she turned around and said, "I'm in big trouble." And of course, this is going to get the attention of these fish and game officers, and they're going to inquire, like, "What's wrong? Why are you in trouble?" They lifted the tarp up off of this vehicle, and they found that it was a gray Subaru Impreza. They also saw what appeared to be blood smeared down it. They looked inside. They found a collapsible folding chair that also had dark red stains. So obviously, this is piquing their interest. So they're checking the vehicle out, you know, the bloody bumper and all this other stuff. And they notice drag marks on the ground. And they spotted another tarp that appeared to be human shaped or wrapped around a body.
So from there, they quickly take Brittany to the nearby Berlin Police Department, where she is detained. So they want to talk with her, but they also dispatch officers to the scene. Those officers check the Subaru license plate, and they find that it's registered to Jonathan Amaral. When they look under the tarp, they discover a headless body. When they lifted up that tarp, supposedly the officers saw blood spill out from that tarp. So just looking at the body, the officer was able to determine that the head had been sawn off with some type of tool. Before the body was moved, they called for the assistant medical examiner to come out and examine the body. And it was noted that there were injuries to the decedent's left wrist and hand, which they thought could have been defensive wounds or an indication that there had been a fall. Now, the victim himself had not been bound, but his upper body had been wrapped in a shipping blanket and then was wrapped in a tarp, and then that was bound. They also found a maroon backpack, which contained two handguns, and one of them had been fired three times with two rounds remaining in the chamber. There was a red poncho covering an assortment of bloodied tools, which included a blade, some saws, and a machete, as well as a white plastic bag filled with blood-soaked clothing. Jonathan Amaral's death was ruled a homicide by gunshot to the head. There was a shoe impression to the right side of his face, as well as bruising on his face and inside of his mouth. Brittany Barron, on September 22nd, wastes no time, Justin. She even waived her Miranda rights. What did she say?
She said, "I tried to do what he told me to do. I tried to follow the instructions I was given. But Fish and Game showed up. I had two guys in green shirts kneeling down, looking at my dog, and I just put that body in the water, like I just flipped him in there." And essentially, she's confessing to disposing of this body via instruction from her husband,
Armando.
Yeah.
She said that on September 19th, her husband discovered that she had been seeing Jonathan Amaral. This happened because he started going through her phone and he found the messages between them. So he confronted her and started attacking her, punching her and striking her while they were in the bathroom.
I mean, he beat her bloody. It was a very violent attack.
Not only did he assault her in the bathroom, but then he dragged her into the bedroom where he threw her on the bed and continued attacking her. And she said this is where he just kept hitting her in the face until her eyes were blacked. Her nose became bloody and her teeth were chipped. Her injuries were listed in the court documents. The hospital and the Cheshire County House of Corrections confirmed these injuries as swelling to her face, bruising to bilateral eyes, left eye, sclera bleed. Her nose was broken and her jaw also injured. She said that at one point, her husband shoved the barrel of a gun into her mouth before he started choking her unconscious. There are pictures of Brittany Barron, so there's no question that her husband attacked her. According to her, their 9-year-old daughter did witness these injuries. But while she was questioned, she said she heard a commotion, but her grandmother led her away.
That night, her husband, Armando, began texting Jonathan from Brittany's phone, pretending to be Brittany. So he's like, "Hey, how you doing, Jonathan? Let's meet up." He told Jonathan to meet him, or her, at a local park, Wayside Park. Armando then dragged Brittany to her car, and they began driving to the park to meet up with Jonathan. And once they got there, Brittany sat in the car, didn't get out, while Armando hid behind the car with a handgun and a machete. Jonathan approached the car, and he saw Brittany's face. And I think at that point, he knew something was wrong. And that's when Armando jumped out, pointed the gun, and just didn't waste any time, just started attacking Jonathan. He had a gun and a machete. So Jonathan isn't really going to have much of a chance, and he's not going to fight back. So Armando just starts punching him over and over again. When Jonathan falls to the ground, he just starts stomping on him and kicking him. And it just continued. Armando forced the gun into Brittany's hand and ordered her to shoot Jonathan. She didn't comply. She didn't pull the trigger. So her husband put her hand around the grip of the gun and put his hand around hers and tried to force the trigger back. Then she was told to stand on Jonathan's throat to suffocate him. So she put her foot on his neck, but according to her, she didn't apply any pressure. She just acted like she was crushing his throat. And that's when Armando orders them all back into the vehicle at gunpoint.
Armando, because he could tell that his wife wasn't going to kill Jonathan, then decides that he's going to change things up. So he shoves Jonathan in the back of his vehicle. He still has a gun on him, and he orders Brittany in and says, slit his wrists. He gives her a blade. So she feels like she doesn't have much of a choice here. This is, again, something that's happened again and again where her husband's trying to get her to cause harm to Jonathan. And this is the first time where she does so. She cut his wrists.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
But these injuries are not what will kill him. So Armando then gets into the passenger side and orders Brittany to drive. There was a point where Jonathan and Brittany were alone in the vehicle, and Jonathan told Brittany, just pick up the machete and kill him, please. But Brittany's response was, you don't understand, man. I'm not going to kill him with that blow, and we're both going to die in this car. I think this is a key moment because, you know, if Brittany does what Jonathan wants her to do, she doesn't think she can kill her husband. She thinks she's just going to tick him off and then they'll both die. But Jonathan knows that he's not going to make it. So at this point, Jonathan had been severely beaten. He was, like you said, he was stomped just everywhere. His wrists were slit. There was some strangulation, but he never passed out. And as Brittany says, he was awake for everything. So Brittany got into the driver's seat as her husband had instructed her. So after she gets into the vehicle, her husband turned toward the back of the car and fired several shots into Jonathan Amaral. Jonathan was shot once in the head and twice in his upper body. Brittany has told the police all of the details regarding the murder of Jonathan Amaral. Now she starts talking about the disposal of the body and evidence. And this is where her husband had said, you need to pack your camping gear and load it into Jonathan's vehicle, and you need to take him out and dispose of stuff.
Armando has purchased a lot of the items, like a shovel, the hacksaw, the tarps, all of these items and instruments to dispose of Jonathan's body.
They had a usual camping spot that was about 4 hours north of where they lived. And this is where Brittany was to cut off Jonathan's head and bury his head and body separately. This is because Armando said that would make it more difficult for the body to be identified.
Brittany, she's been beaten to a bloody pulp. She's had a gun in her mouth, and she's just witnessed her boyfriend be beaten and murdered in front of her face. She does as she's told, and she drives, and she sets up camp and tries to do what Armando has instructed her to do.
Allegedly, Armando told Brittany that he would forgive her by sunrise. He said, listen, I'm asking you all this now because once sunlight hits, I forgive you. Like, it is done. I forgive you. Even after all this, I still love you. But first, you got to dispose of the body and get rid of the evidence. When Armando purchased the items that they were going to need, he paid with Brittany's debit card as well as cash. And my guess is because I think he was trying to set this up as she did it.
Yep, I agree.
I don't see any other reason. Either that, or it could be as simple as, this is your mess, you're going to pay. This is all going on your card. But I mean, they're a married couple.
Yeah, I would agree with your first analysis, though, that I think that if they were caught, he was going to try to pin this on her.
Armando purchased two tarps. One was to cover the vehicle. One was to wrap the victim's body. And then there was a shovel so that the graves could be dug, one for the head, one for the body. He also got some lighter fluid and cleaner.
Once they got to that camping spot, Armando had instructed her to clean Jonathan's vehicle and pay special attention to the steering wheel, doors, and interior. But she missed the outside of the vehicle where the fish and game officers saw the blood.
Armando lit a fire and tossed Jonathan's belongings into it. This included his various cards, like his bank cards, his ID card, his wallet, a garage door opener remote, and the car manual. And he insisted that Brittany burn the pile of items one more time to make sure that they were really gone. That's not to say that worked, but those were his instructions. Now here's the gruesome part. Armando forced Brittany to saw off Jonathan's head with a saw that had been left behind at the campsite. And she severed his head, wrapped it up, and dropped it into a hole she had dug and pushed the loose earth back into the hole. And she was to bury the body somewhere else.
When she was trying to put it in the water that she was camped by and hoping that it would just sink to the bottom.
I don't know that we can get into her head here, but digging a hole for a body, that's no easy task. And so I don't know if this is where she starts to ignore his instructions or if she just didn't think she could do it. But she told the officers that Armando left at least two times while she was trying to dispose of the body. And once because he wanted to get another shovel, and another time because he went back to Keene with Jonathan's cell phone. And this is because he had come up with a plan where he would send messages from Jonathan's phone saying he was fine. But because Brittany spilled it all, this plan really didn't come to fruition.
I mean, she immediately told the fish and game people, I'm going to be in trouble, and had the body out in plain view. Then she immediately confessed to the police once she was taken into custody. She didn't try to conceal this or hide it from any of the authorities at all. She immediately just said, this is what's happened.
And we know what happened to Jonathan's phone because When Armando went back to the campsite, he smashed Jonathan's phone and he gave half the phone to Brittany. And he said, we're going to throw this out on the drive back to town.
I mean, obviously he doesn't understand how cell phones work. You don't just smash it and then throw it out and all is okay. They track everything that the phone's been doing up until that point. So his little plan isn't going to work out at all. And they're even able to recover the broken pieces of the phone from the trail and the roads that they drove back on.
And the reason why they heard from people that said that Brittany was going to start over somewhere else, meaning New Mexico, is because that's what Armando told her to do. And that's what she had messaged friends and family saying, marital troubles, I need to start over. I'm going to miss the kids, but I can't be part of this anymore.
Armando doesn't know that she's been arrested yet. Doesn't know that she's already told the cops everything. So now Sergeant Stephen Sloper has the delicate job of trying to contact Armando and coax him into police custody. So this sergeant calls Armando and says, hey, you know, your wife's missing. She called in, you know, to human resources and quit her job. So we want to talk to you about your missing wife here. Don't you have any concern for her? And Armando just kind of seems irritated by this and said, my wife's not missing. He probably even brought up like he dropped her off so she could go camping and do whatever, but he's not really biting. So he rejects the sergeant's request to come into the station for questioning.
He has an excuse. He says, I'm going camping with my daughter.
I mean, the whole family's going camping, I guess. It just, that's what's important right now.
Well, I think this is also kind of a message to the police saying, yeah, I'm going with my daughter because my wife and I are no longer together. It's kind of another hint that, you know, I'm not worried about my wife. She does what she's going to do. Just because she quit her job doesn't mean she's missing. And remember, by his own instructions, she had contacted friends and family in response when they had asked her, are you okay? She said, I'm thinking about relocating to New Mexico to start over. I'll stay with my sister. You know, the word is out there that she's probably going to be leaving anyway. And he's just sticking with that story.
They know that Armando is with his daughter. So this concerns them. And they're tracking his cell phone. And they're seeing that it's pinging off towers that are outside of town and by a large national park. So they're thinking, is this guy taking off on us? He's got his daughter with him. So they're rolling and going to triangulate where he's at. And they track down his vehicle, but Armando wasn't inside. The Jeep had been left abandoned and unlocked in an employee-only parking lot outside of a pharmaceutical company in Jaffrey, New Hampshire. That was September 22nd. The Jeep was covered in mud, and when the officers looked in through the windows, they noticed what most likely was blood smeared on the driver's side door and on the passenger seat. That gave them enough evidence to get a search warrant.
So that Jeep was taken to the New Hampshire State Police Station.
They go to Armando's residence, and Armando's mother is home, but no sign of Armando. She claims that her son and granddaughter went to the grocery store. She says that due to the COVID-19 pandemic, they were going to stock up on toilet paper and all those things. But according to her, they went shopping at around 10 a.m. that morning, September 23rd. So they've been gone a while.
Now they're looking for Armando's stepfather's vehicle, and it's missing. So they put out a bolo for a gold Toyota Tundra. This vehicle was spotted pretty quickly, and they found Armando and his 9-year-old daughter inside.
Armando, once they pulled him over and took him into custody, they found that he was covered with cuts and scratches all over his wrists. And they did a full body exam on him and found a lot of blood all over his body, his forearms, his leg. And it appeared that he had changed clothing. So, yeah, this is looking pretty suspicious. What else did they find in the vehicle?
Well, inside that vehicle, they also found bags of soil. They found a tarp, quick drying cement, shovel, and a metal frame that was about 5 foot long. There were, of course, no groceries. So they really doubted this story that Armando and his daughter had been shopping for food and supplies. And Armando's mother maintained that the shovel and soil was purchased with the intention of burying food and essentials. You know, for safekeeping.
The family's in on it now. Great.
They discovered that this shovel, tarp, it was purchased at a Home Depot in Keene on the 22nd of September. You had mentioned that there were hunters that called in about illegal campers. And of course, that's something that people should do because they're at risk. If you're in a hunting area where bear are known to move around in, you don't need campers out there.
Yeah, I mean, and plus, what if you end up shooting a camper? You know, it's just a dangerous situation.
These hunters described the Subaru that came in with a Jeep following behind it. And they said that the male driver of the Jeep was hailed because they wanted to tell him, hey, we've got some bear baiting spots in the area. But the man who was driving the Jeep simply grunted and nodded his head in response. Like, he wasn't even taking them seriously. So they said they saw that Jeep again around 7:30 in the morning on Monday, September 21st, parked in a campsite area. And they asked, did you see the Subaru? And they said they didn't. 3 hours later, they returned to where that Jeep was to make a note of the license plate. But by 10 a.m., it wasn't there anymore, and they couldn't find anybody. But they did see that there were some camping items left behind. And the next morning on September 22nd, at around 8, the hunters went past this campsite, which was in a 100-yard vicinity of where their bear baiting site was. So they pulled up to the campsite and they honked their horn. And that's when they found Brittany and her dog. So when she came out, they told her, hey, we've got a bear bait site really close to your camp. So this is totally unsafe. You know, you could possibly get shot out here, whatever. You're not supposed to be here. And Brittany just said that she didn't know anything about the rules. So that's when they decided to alert New Hampshire Fish and Game, which of course sent out wardens to investigate. So with all this information, Justin, officers are ready to move.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wrapped up neatly for them. There's no mystery. They have their suspects in custody and they know exactly what happened because of Brittany's statements.
Brittany Barron was arrested September 24th, 2020, and charged with the crime of falsifying physical evidence. So it's believed that she altered, destroyed, concealed, or removed things with the purpose to impair the investigation. She also cleaned or attempted to clean the interior of the vehicle and remove Jonathan Amaral's head from his body. So these are all things they're saying impaired the investigation. And a day later, Armando Barron was arrested and charged with capital murder for knowingly causing the death of Jonathan Amaral by shooting him while engaged in the commission of a kidnapping.
Yeah, that's felony murder right there.
Now, as is usual, both of them pled not guilty to these charges, but they were held without bail. There was a court hearing in September of 2020, and Brittany's defense attorney, Richard Guerrero, he attempted to get Brittany released. He said, we can electronically monitor her and let her live at her address where she lived. But the court wasn't feeling so cool with that. He had been arguing that Brittany had been assaulted by her husband, threatened, and then forced. And this is after suffering abuse for years, forced to kill her boyfriend. But he said she complied with investigators. She led them to evidence. She showed them every location that was involved in these crimes. He said, you were able to put all this together because she gave you everything. And she had worked at the same job for several years before she quit. She had no criminal history. She's not a danger to society. And I think he pled basically that you have to understand her situation.
I mean, I would say she all but had a gun pointed at her, but she did have a gun pointed at her, shoved into her mouth at one point during this whole episode.
Other evidence was brought up to try and defend Brittany here. The defense read quotes from a female co-worker of Brittany's saying how Armando is very controlling and that she knew all about Armando and his abuse of Brittany. He didn't let Brittany drive to or from work. He was the one to drop her off and pick her up. And another co-worker said that Armando didn't want Brittany to have any friends. She wasn't allowed to go out with her friends from work. She said that Brittany had told her how Armando had hit her when she told him that she didn't think the marriage was working and that they should probably get a divorce. A male co-worker had heard the same thing from Brittany. So everybody's saying Brittany wanted out of this marriage, but she wasn't allowed to leave the marriage. This is all domestic violence stuff. But, you know, the assistant attorney general, Scott Chase, he said, you know, I think Brittany Barron may attempt to conceal additional evidence if we let her go. I mean, she already did all this out of fear of her husband. Who knows if she's really ready to completely buck that system or not? He said what she did went beyond concealing evidence. He said, after driving Jonathan's body nearly 200 miles north from the crime scene in Jonathan's own car, deep into the North Woods, the defendant decapitated Jonathan, wrapped his head in a tarp, and placed it in a grave in order to prevent investigators from identifying Jonathan if his body was ever found. The defendant then wrapped Jonathan's body in a tarp and dragged him deeper into the woods, where investigators found him in a shallow brook. Had this defendant successfully destroyed that evidence, her husband, the alleged murderer, may very well have evaded detection and or apprehension. So I think this is where the assistant attorney general is saying, hey, hold up on giving her any credit, because if it hadn't been for these game wardens coming out, we might not have known anything. So then he goes into how Brittany had access to a car, she had her cell phone, and eventually, before Armando left for the last time, he gave her two firearms. So then he's like, how does she not do the right thing when she's in this situation? She had time to think. She didn't have Armando breathing down her neck. She was armed, and she had a vehicle and a cell phone.
But her defense attorney, and as a lot of people will say and defend her, when you're in an abusive relationship like that, when you're being controlled, when you've just had a severe beating and a gun put in your mouth, logic and reason kind of goes out the window. And she was scared of Armando. I mean, we kind of got that when Jonathan said, kill him, get him with the machete, and she refused.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called StoryWorth. StoryWorth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/GenY. That's StoryWorth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
So on September 1st, 2021, Brittany Barron
entered a notice of intent to plead guilty to 3 counts of falsifying evidence.
And this is going to get her a very reduced sentence.
Now, her defense attorneys had claimed the only reason that she did all of this, that she helped her husband, was because she feared for her life and the life of her 9-year-old daughter. This plea agreement that Brittany has allegedly agreed to, she's of course cooperating with prosecutors in their case against her husband, Armando Barron, and she'll also be paying for Jonathan Amaral's funeral costs and costs incurred for counseling services by Jonathan's family members. So even though the sentencing hearing is coming up, they're saying that she will be eligible for parole after 1.5 years. And Justin, this brings up a really good question. Even though this case is still needing to go through the courts and everything, we have so much information due to court records that are available. And so the main question in this case is, Brittany Barron helped her husband in these crimes. How culpable should she have been? I mean, how much responsibility does she bear? Or is this really a question of, why are we going to blame another victim?
Yeah. And technically, the court charged her with the crimes she had committed, because Armando is the one that shot and killed Jonathan. And after that, disposing of a body and, you know, even the gruesome nature of what she did to Jonathan's corpse. I mean, it's horrible, but she didn't murder him. She wasn't the one that called Jonathan and set up the meeting. She wasn't the one that went to Home Depot and bought tarps and other items to dispose of his body. She wasn't the one that pulled the trigger. She did assist in disposing of a body, and that's what the prosecutor is charging her with. Obstruction of justice and, destruction of evidence. I mean, on paper, they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're charging her with the crimes she committed. But obviously, this isn't going to make Jonathan's family happy, because they feel like she was an accessory to the murder of their son, their family member.
And I understand that Jonathan's family are really upset by all this, because they believe that there are 2 people who should be headed off to prison. They should be found guilty and sent off to prison for forever, basically. But this is where I think there's a gray area, because it seems like for the longest time, Justin, there's been a lot of ignorance about domestic violence and almost a blind eye turned towards it. I mean, we've heard stories of domestic abuse victims being questioned by officers in front of their abusers. This is something that I feel like we're still trying to get a handle on. And I know she committed crimes. Brittany Barron committed crimes. She has been charged and she has pled guilty, right? And so at least 2 of these charges. And I feel like that's what should have happened. She needs to be held accountable, but I think there needs to be some understanding on for her as well, because she's been a victim herself. She was attacked. She was brutalized by her husband. There has to be some understanding here, I would think. And so I know we've talked about this in the past, but where do you draw the line? Are we just supposed to destroy everybody's lives? It's because as far as we can tell in this story, and the evidence seems to bear it out, Brittany did her best not to kill Jonathan. But once he was dead, that's when she started to dispose of his body, because I think at that point she felt like there was nothing left to fight for. But here's the thing. As soon as any kind of authority showed up, which there's, you know, nothing against fish and game wardens, but once they showed up, she spilled the beans to them. And I feel like this is important. We've talked in the past about when does someone's coming clean matter? Well, I think it should be as soon as possible. And in this case, yeah, she didn't drive herself to a police station But as soon as someone showed up, I think then is when she started to feel safe with telling the truth. And I think it matters because it happened relatively quickly. I mean, she could have said, uh-oh, there are some people that are trying to get a hold of me here out at, you know, at my campsite. I think I might be exposed. Maybe she could have tried to just get out of there, but she didn't. She stayed there. And it wasn't long before those officers showed up. So I feel like even though this doesn't please Jonathan's family, I think in the interest of protecting all victims, we have to give some credit to Brittany Barron for coming clean and giving everything over to the police. She led them to all the locations that mattered. So again, we could just bring everybody down, but this was Armando. Armando Barron is the one that did this. Brittany Barron isn't the one that set this up. She didn't want Jonathan to die.
No, this wasn't her plan. This wasn't in any shape or form part of her idea of what could happen. And obviously, she was having marital problems, and that's why she was even talking with Jonathan. Obviously, she wanted to get out of that marriage. She'd spoken with other, you know, coworkers and friends about it. She just wasn't able to, as a lot of domestic violence victims are not able to get out of the relationship out of fear or just being broken down mentally to the point where it just, they're unable to leave. I think that the investigators did what they were supposed to, and they were able to execute the arrests and everything efficiently. And I think the prosecutors treated everyone involved fairly. And I think that this is one of those cases where you see how efficient law enforcement can be when executing arrests and tracking people down. But a lot of people will argue over at least Brittany's sentencing and what she was charged with.
As far as I know where things stand now, we have Brittany, her story, her defense, we have her plea deal, and then we have Armando Barron on the other side, who has pled not guilty and maintains that he was not involved in Jonathan's murder and that there's no physical evidence tying him to that murder. And again, we can just go back to when he made those purchases, he used his wife's debit card. If that's not trying to set her up, I don't know what is. But that's the thing is, there were witnesses that saw these two driving the vehicles out there, that Impreza and that Jeep.
It took two people to do this, and they have them on security camera footage buying these things. I mean, there's too much showing that he's involved with this, because his little story of, I had nothing to do with this, it was all her, it's obvious that he was involved.
Well, we'll see how it plays out, but I think from the evidence we do have, it looks really bad for him. But, you know, what they say is, you're not guilty until you're found guilty in a court of law.
Yeah.
So until Armando Barron is found guilty, he's just a man in custody awaiting trial. Unless he, of course, takes a plea at some point. Do you see that happening?
He might cop a plea because he's going to get life without the possibility of parole.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a plea to be had here personally. I mean, that would be nice. It would save the family, Jonathan's family, a lot of time and anguish. But I don't know. If you believe Brittany, this is not a man who's just going to give up. Judge Peter Bornstein set the sentencing date for October 6th, 2021. When this case first broke, Brittany Barron's name was everywhere. And that was pretty controversial because she was a domestic abuse survivor. And so the question is, if someone is reporting abuse and then they're suddenly in the news, that may deter, which we already know there's a problem with people coming forward who are abused. What does that tell the rest of the people out there who may be suffering abuse at the hands of their spouse? You know, if they see that someone has made the news, if it was a sexual assault victim, their names would not be released, right? There's a difference here, I think, because Brittany Barron had been involved in crimes related to the murder of her boyfriend, Jonathan Amaral. So I think it created a bit of a problem. And so many people, if you ask Jonathan Amaral's family, they would just tell you, she's a murderer. Why would you not release her name?
She's both a victim and a criminal. So you can play both sides of that.
What I do appreciate, though, is this dialogue questioning whether we should release names or not. And the reason I find that helpful is because we need to think about how things are reported and why and in what circumstances we should report names. Because obviously, if you have someone who, I don't know, gunned down several people in public and was apprehended, and they know that's the person that did it, I understand reporting their name. But when it comes to someone who's been abused, and we have the pictures to prove it, that Brittany Barron was abused by her husband, well, that becomes a question. If you're an abuse survivor and you go and talk to the police, that's a big step, and not everyone can do it. If you're suddenly in the news, there are all these articles about you, your picture, your name's everywhere. What does that tell other people who might want to come forward? Now, again, I think it's complicated because she was involved in crimes related to the murder of her boyfriend. So I don't know that the case is as simple as some make it out to be, but I know there are people out there with different opinions on this.
Let us know what you think in our social media, Gen Y Pod, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you follow us.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all 6 episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.